Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Cuthbert. Welcome to Primetime Radio. There are many books out there to tell you what tools to use to organize your assault on financial problems and systems, but few that tell you overall approaches to take to solve specific problems. Ellen Rogan and Lisa King have combined to focus on women, yes, but anyone who is struggling to make sense of financial matters can use the book to give yourself purpose and direction, even though after 50 you think you have purpose enough. As their title says, you can picture your prosperity. Visualization is an important part of their approach to things financial, and it may help you keep track of your goals, your perspectives, and your motivation for getting your financial house in order, even though you feel you're a veteran in finance and know it all. Lisa speaks to us from St. Louis. Hi, Lisa King.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Your thesis is based on the perhaps odd fact that thinking about a process or question is usually efficient as practicing it. Explain how this can be applied to finance.
I think as almost every athlete knows, and perhaps as most of us, as just as humans know, visualization can be an incredibly powerful tool. And so let's just use the athletics example for a moment. Any golfer knows this intuitively. If you talk to a golfer about envisioning their golf swing, you know, if you talk to a tennis player about envisioning their serve, going through the various parts of it in their mind's eye before they ever hit the course or the tennis court, they'll almost always light up and they will make that connection between what they think about doing and what they actually do when it comes to the game itself. And so that same principle can be applied to other areas of life, including our finances.
But we have to know that it's not infallible, right?
No, it's not infallible. And yet it's incredibly powerful. And there's been a lot of new brain science research done around this area. And one of the key facts that is relatively newly embraced by brain scientists, and listen, by no means are we brain scientists, but we've done the research. There is one particular researcher named Srini Pillai. His last name is spelled P-I-L-L-A-Y. And he is a Harvard Med School graduate. And he, in a book called The Brain and Business, talks about the link between the part of the brain we stimulate when we envision completing an action and the part of the brain that we stimulate when we actually complete that action. So it's now widely accepted among scientists that that is the same part of the brain. So the very same part of the brain that we use to envision ourselves doing these things is the part we use to do it. And what it does is it really conclusively shows that link that scientists have been suspecting for a long time, but have only recently really been able to prove. So we see the science that underpins this, that shows you that it's not just being positive or having the right attitude, although certainly there's a lot of merit around that, but it really goes further. It really shows this direct linkage in our mind to making things happen.
My father was a band director, a musician of some note, and he always referred to it as Russian learning. The fact that you could practice something, but if you didn't even have your instrument and practiced it with your fingers, you could learn many skills without wrecking your lip or anything else. Have you heard that phrase, Russian learning?
It's funny you use that phrase. I've not heard it in that context, but I can tell you that in the book we talk about a Russian study of Olympic athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, it's interesting because there was a study there of Olympic athletes looking at this very issue. So there were four groups of athletes. And in preparation for the Olympic Games, one group did 100% physical training and no mental training. And then to varying degrees, they finally got to the fourth group. The fourth group ended up doing only 25% physical training and 75% mental training. And it was that last group that performed the best in the Olympic Games that year. And that was a Russian study. So maybe there's something going on there.
I think so. You refer constantly to RAS. What is that and how does it work in financial organization?
So the RAS, or reticular activating system.
Boy, that sounds like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It sounds very, very exotic in a way, doesn't it? It's the part of our brain that's really responsible for this visualization. And what it is a filter. So think of this as about the size of your little finger, and it's part of your brain stem. And it's responsible for information that your brain lets in and also information that your brain keeps out. It's a filter. So for example, on a typical day on your way to run a routine errand from your home to wherever it is you're going, How much do you pass that you do not notice? Mm-mm. I'll just ask you, you know, how much do you pass that you don't take in?
Yeah. Oh, me? Probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I figured about 80%.
Yeah. Or more, right?
Yeah.
It's at least that. We pass by so much that we just don't see because we don't really need to. And how does that happen? Well, it's this RAS that essentially is telling our conscious brain, you don't need to know any of this stuff. You need to know where your turn is. You need to know where the traffic light is. You need to know these basic facts. And that's all you really need to know right now. And the rest of it, I'm going to keep out for you. So that's what it does. It keeps it, filters it out. It's just a simple example of what it filters out. It's a simple example of what it lets in, what it filter, what it lets come into the filter. Here's another example. I don't know if you've bought a new car recently, but if you ask somebody if they, you know, have purchased a new car in the last year or two, you ask them what they bought. Say it's a black Honda Civic. You buy a black Honda Civic. All of a sudden, you start experiencing very often the new car phenomena where you start seeing black Honda Civics everywhere on the road. You see them everywhere. And it's not as though you're consciously looking. It's not as though you leave your home in the morning and think, my goal today is to go out and count black Honda Civics. And yet you see them because it's now relevant to your brain, to your reticular activating system or RAS in a way that it wasn't before. It's on the radar screen. And all of this happens subconsciously without us having to really direct, you know, energy or conscious thought to it. And it's really exciting because this is a part of your brain that is literally responsible for what you see in the world or what you don't, what you hear in the world or what you don't, the opportunities and options that you perceive or miss. And it all happens quite subconsciously. So that's a little glimpse into to our research around the RAS.
How does this RAS change as we grow older? And how does it affect making good economic decisions?
Like anything else, finances and making good economic decisions are somewhat conscious choices, and they're somewhat unconscious choices and somewhat emotional, right? So as the RAS is either awake to opportunities and to options or isn't, then that starts to influence decisions that we make about savings habits, investing habits, opportunities that we see for things that we want to do in life. Because after all, money is really just a means to an end, right? We don't need money in and of itself. We need money because it can help us achieve certain life goals that we set out for ourselves or life standards that we set out for ourselves. And so the RAS is the part of it that essentially says, here's an example that I heard recently. It was a woman and her husband that really wanted to have a sailboat. That was one of their life goals. And that, of course, requires some significant money. They lived in the Bay Area of California. Quite an investment to have a sailboat there. And they really just didn't have enough saved for that purpose. And so, yet it was something she thought about, something she visualized, something she could see herself doing, picture the good times on the sailboat. And one day, as she was sort of driving along her normal route, all of a sudden, she saw a sign for a timeshare portion of a sailboat. And she didn't even know that this was possible. She didn't know anyone who did this. She didn't know it was an option. Yet she saw a billboard for it, literally. Call this number to learn more. Long story short, she and her husband now have a timeshare portion of a sailboat. They get to go on their boat, I think it's once a week or so. They have lovely times out there. They have enough money for that. They don't have enough money to have their own sailboat, but this has essentially helped them fulfill their desire because she was sort of awake to different ways that she can make this happen in her life, using her money as a tool to get there.
Lisa King is our guest. Her book, along with Ellen Rogan, is Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. What was involved in smart money that turned that vision into a boat?
Excellent choice, or excellent question, I should say. We all can make different decisions about our money, about how we save our money, how we invest our money, whether or not we move money in and out of the market. A lot of that is driven by emotion and our perception of what's going on around us, right? As markets are good, you know, you can certainly look at the investor psychology. You can look at more money flowing into the market because it feels like a good time to be in. As markets turn sour, people will often pull their money because they're afraid. All of these things are decisions that we make on often a gut level. And so to be in touch with that gut level, to be in touch with what we're telling ourselves, what our comfort level with risk is, the decisions that we make along the way can really help us to focus and to make solid financial decisions that are coming from a centered place rather than coming from emotion. So being in touch with what you're doing, the decisions you're making with your money on a daily basis is really important.
How, as we age, let's say for someone 35, dreaming of that boat is fine because you have the luxury of dreaming of owning your own boat and then owning a bigger boat later. But let's say you're 50 plus. Your options are a little bit more limited by time, but are they sufficiently expanded by knowledge to make the difference?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, time is always on our side when it comes to investing. And I know that 50 isn't the same as 20, of course. Yet we still have time to build. We still have time to grow. We still have time to take advantage of the magic, as we say, the beauty of compound interest. These are things that apply to us across ages. Absolutely. We still have time to keep going forward. And certainly there are things that are more actually only available after the age of 50, like catch-up provisions, right, with your 401k contributions if you're still working, or catch-up contributions in a Roth or a traditional IRA. You actually can, you know, you're allowed to save greater amounts of money with tax benefits, so you can take advantage of those things as well. So it certainly continues as we age.
You use a phrase, clear and cancel.
Uh-huh.
Explain that phrase and how it works.
Now, this is a fascinating area. We have 60,000 individual thoughts a day, the average person does, which is an astounding number. So a lot of times we find that people tell themselves negative things about money without even necessarily being aware of what they're telling themselves. So we all have beliefs around money that were instilled when we were very small. There's a book called The Biology of Belief written by Bruce Lipton. And in that book, Lipton points out that we form our beliefs around money and around most important things in life between the ages of 0 and 6. So in this particular age example, if you're 7, you're over the hill. You know, you've already gone too far in terms of what fundamental beliefs you have. And the thing here, and going back to your question, is that these beliefs can sometimes be helpful and they can sometimes not be. So if you find yourself telling yourself things like, oh, I've never been good with money. You know, I don't even want to open this statement because I don't want to know what it says, because I'm just not really good with this sort of thing. That's an example of something that obviously is not helping you if you have that thought. So a technique to stop that kind of negative thinking that can only really get in our way and prevent us from reaching goals is to tell ourselves cancel clear. So the first step is be aware of it. Number one, be aware of which of the 60,000 thoughts that you've had that day you're telling yourself now. If you identify it as one that is negative and not helpful, just tell yourself to stop. Being aware, okay, is this something helping me? No. This is, I'm aware I had a bad thought. It's not helping me. I'm telling myself to just cancel it away, clear it out, replace it with something positive that will help you potentially get closer to your goals rather than something that is defeatist. You know, there's this old quote I'm sure you've heard from Henry Ford, and I'm paraphrasing just a bit, but he essentially said, if you believe you can, or if you believe you can't, you're probably right.
Lisa King is our guest. Her book is Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. You talk about, in constructing a portfolio, three visual models for yourself: the minivan, the sedan, and the sports car. For someone over 50, how do the cars differ, since there may be no time to make a choice, or you may be sick of the minivan and all the soccer balls that are gone in the first place?
You know, this is largely a very personal decision. Those are rough analogies that we came up with. The actual way that these things would break out can be very, very different depending on what we call your risk comfort level. You know, it's important to really be in touch with what you want to do. What are your goals? Have an idea of how much those things cost, and then begin to invest your money in such a way that you're increasing your chances of making those things happen But also, you know, not to the extent that you have to get up in the middle of the night to chug Pepto-Bismol because you're worried about market fluctuation. So those are simply three analogies that we have to, you know, help you gauge how much are you comfortable, how much risk are you comfortable tolerating, and balancing that with what your ultimate goals are. And that really transcends age.
You advocate, when necessary, a financial support team. What would they do to help you, and how formal is the organization? Do you have to get uniforms and play in a basketball league?
I would like to see that happen, if you could point us in that direction. I would like to see such a team. A financial support team can be anything from your significant other, you know, a close friend or family member that's going to support you in your goals, all the way to a financial professional, you know, to working with a financial advisor who's professionally trained to help you make decisions and manage your money. So it's important, though, I would say, to make sure you've got people that you're comfortable with around you that are positive influences and that are going to support you in what you're doing. Because as we all know, that can make a big difference in our ability to move forward.
Do they have to share your picture of your prosperity or your vision?
They don't have to, but I would really advocate that they do, because they don't have to share yours, but they should know what yours is. I mean, they can certainly have their own vision of what success looks like. But to literally have a visual financial plan is something that we are huge believers in. So this is what we call creating your own prosperity picture. And it begins with images, things that represent something to you that are meaningful, that you'd like to see happen in your life. So in the book, we have 32 different images, some of which are symbolic things like a plant or a yin and yang symbol, and some of which are more literal, like a sailboat or an airplane, maybe representing travel, whatever it might be. You don't have to use our images. You can use your own magazine photos, personal photos, things you found online, whatever is easy to access, and to actually create a visual financial plan by placing those images on a sheet of paper or cardboard that's divided in sections representing how long you have. Is this something you want right away, right now, within the next 3 to 5 years? Is this something for later on? So sooner or later, less money or more money. Now you have four quadrants and you start to move these things around. And it really is a visual amalgam of what's most important to you in your life, what you're setting out to achieve. And it stimulates your brain. It stimulates that RAS that we talked about earlier and kind of wakes up your brain for chances to look to make that actually happen. So to go to your question, sharing that with someone that's your financial partner in any way is really valuable.
I was doing okay with all of them, except I came on one that was a kitten and a puppy, and I wasn't sure what that symbolized, other than a very busy house.
You know, we have
house.
A lot of people that pick that, and they cut one of the two animals out.
Oh, how awful.
Isn't that awful? Because, you know, you find that you have cat people and dog people, and they have a lot of conviction about their preference. And
as
so,
Facebook shows you, they can all get along.
Everyone can get along.
Our guest is Lisa King. Along with Ellen Rogan, she's written Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. I'm Mike Cuthbert in Washington. You're listening to Prime Time Radio. Remember to join us every week on this radio station for interviews with folks we figure will be interesting to you, as well as the latest information on your health, welfare, finances, and lifestyles. You can keep in touch with us by email. That address is primetime@aarp.org. Or you can reach us by Twitter, #AARP, or Facebook, Facebook.com/AARP. This is Prime Time Radio. Lisa King is our guest. Her book, along with Ellen Rogan, is Picture Your Prosperity. You have an interesting section on giving away money, which builds subjective wealth. Most people tend to do this as they reach maturity, 50 plus perhaps. What are the advantages of giving away money, and what is subjective wealth?
It's a really fascinating area. So there has been a lot of research done on the residual benefits of giving. You know, and I think most people give because it's in their nature to give, and they want to help other people, of course. That's their primary motivation. There's also, though, a bonus, like a bonus that you get in the Cracker Jack box. There's something that people that give get back for themselves, even though that may not be the reason they're doing it. In fact, probably isn't. And it comes in various forms, one of which, and I'm sure that you're well aware of this, is health and longevity. So there was a book called The Longevity Project, which was released several years ago with multiple findings. It was an 80-year study. So that one lasted so long that the study long outlasted some of the researchers. You know, they actually changed teams to get this thing into completion. But they followed people over 80 years, and they found that people that engaged in philanthropic activity, people that gave, actually outlived people that did not. They actually had a longer life. So you have this very definable health benefit from giving. And that's one, you know, extra bonus for doing so. And then there is this idea also of subjective wealth, which is a little bit harder, I think, to kind of, you know, get your head around, because it's a little surprising. And what subjective wealth says, and this is research done by Arthur Brooks, written about in the New York Times last year, is that there is a link between people that give and what their W-2 says at the end of the year. So in other words, people that give more actually make more in a measurable way. And it even applies to countries. Countries with larger gross domestic products that give more actually grow their GDP. So we see this across the board. And the reason why researchers are sort of chalking this up to happening is this idea of subjective wealth. The idea is that when you give, if I give someone right now $10,000 for a cause that I really believe in, that I know is really going to help someone, I feel good and I feel wealthy. I feel like, wow, I must be doing really well to be able to give away $10,000 today. And that then translates, the theory goes, into what I do at my own job, how productive I am, how happy I am, the influence that I have on other people. And in the end, kind of comes back to my own bottom line. I'm outperforming at work. I'm doing very well. I have perhaps new career opportunities. And, you know, the cycle continues. So that's what subjective wealth theory really says.
You have a section on, well, for lack of a better phrase, shining your light in the world. How does preparing to do that, being a little less than humble, perhaps, relate to finances?
This is an area where if you start to think just a little bit about the effects that wealth can have, you know, what we mean by shining your light in the world is looking around your own home, your own community, your own world, and looking at what you really can do to give back, what's going to really get you excited and make you happy and help other people as well. That's what we're referring to as shining your light. And if you look at just something simple, like wealth inheritance that's about to happen, you know, as baby boomers age and we see wealth begin to transfer, more and more hands falling in, or more and more wealth rather falling into the hands of people that can make new decisions about it. If only a small portion of that, if only there's, for example, an estimated $22 trillion expected to fall into the hands of baby boomer women soon because of wealth transfer. If only 10% of that were used for philanthropic purposes, every child in the world could be immunized. No one would be hungry. You know, we would have all kinds of additional resources for medical research, for renewable energy research, for all kinds of things that can really make an impact. And think about the exciting possible outcomes of that. That's what true wealth is really about. I mean, is true wealth really about just having an extra car or an extra vacation home? Or is true wealth about something that can really make an impact in the world? When do you feel best, you know, using your money? And that's really what we're kind of getting to with that idea of shining your light.
Lisa, finally, how difficult is it for an older investor to learn new approaches to a very complicated field, particularly given the impact of the computer and financial information at your fingertips, financial TV too, and the fact that the usual investor finds their goals greatly changed as they age and as they accumulate more wealth?
Yeah, you know, we're big advocates of taking a values-based approach to investing and to spending. A values-based spending plan might be something to, you know, think about for all of us as we age. What is really important? Where should our money go to make us the happiest and best serve us? And really ask some tough questions about that. I have a quick example of this. It's a woman who as she was looking at her budget and where she was spending her money on a monthly basis, she realized, like many of us do, that her home was one big area. And she also realized that her adult children had left the house and that after they did that, that her house was no longer the priority that it once was. She just didn't care about it as much. It wasn't as central to her life. Meanwhile, she was still working, and she was working at a family business that, frankly, she did not really particularly enjoy. It was causing her stress. A big reason she stayed with that is because she needed the money to, you know, balance her monthly budget. And a big part of that was this house that she didn't really want. And so she made a really big decision that I'm not sure a lot of people would, that, you know, maybe this house isn't really as necessary as I've always thought. Maybe I could do something different. And long story short, she ended up selling it, moving into a condo that was much less expensive, and being able to leave that job and do something that she really enjoyed more. So really making a positive change for her life, driven by what her values were at that time, which were different than they had been earlier in her life, and being a lot happier.
The book is Picture Your Prosperity, Smart Money Moves to Turn Your Vision into Reality. The authors are Ellen Rogan and our guest today, Lisa King. Thanks, Lisa, for being with us.
It was a true pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you at home for joining us on Primetime Radio. We invite you to call our toll-free number with comments on our programs. The number is 1-800-424-9343. In Washington, D.C. only, 202-434-7608. We're online at aarp.org/radio with information about our guests and an assortment of previous broadcasts. Primetime Radio is a production of AARP. Our producer is Cheryl Martin. Our associate producer, John Allen. Our engineer is Julio Gonzalez. Our post-production engineer, Ben Pizzuto. Thanks to Keith Lee at Clayton Studios in St. Louis for engineering help this week. I'm Mike Cuthbert in Washington.